Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's edition of the Spanish Football Podcast. I'm Phil Kitramanidis, joined as ever on a Monday by Sid Lowe to discuss what happened in the weekend's action. Hello, Sydney.
Hello, Phil. How are you doing?
I'm not doing too badly. Are you physically well?
Not too bad. You know, normal Monday, but apart from that, all right.
Ah, so when you say normal Monday, you mean sort of in pieces and absolutely fraying and just about crawling over the line. Yes.
I do sometimes wake up on a Monday morning and just think, oh God. Now what?
I think you and many, many people around the world, Sid.
That is true. Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not going to go too far down the victimhood route.
No, you're not in a club of one.
No, I absolutely am not. No. Yeah.
Anyway, here we are to record this podcast to hopefully make Tuesday morning more bearable for people if they're listening to us. We want to say a big thank you, by the way, to everyone who bought a TSFP shirt or some socks from our friends at Gambea. If you haven't got one yet, don't worry. They say they're keeping sales open for a little bit longer. I know we said it was a limited time. That's what they told us. But they said they're going to keep it open a little bit longer. We don't know how long for. This isn't a very clever marketing tactic. I promise we're not that clever when it comes to marketing. But they did say that they're going to keep it open for a little bit longer. If you're keen, you can get yours now at Gambea, GAMBEA.com/TSFP. Literally dozens of you have. So we've done quite well on the sales. So we might be able to get some more merch with our friends at Gambea in the pipeline. So thank you very much for buying a t-shirt and or some socks. Here's what happened.
I was online doing it yesterday, Phil. I've bought a handful of pieces of TSFP goodies.
You did, yes, for various members of the family, I'm sure. So that's Christmas sorted, you know, in March.
The thing is, what happens is when you do it that early, you just forget about it and then you find it in the cupboard.
Yes.
Sort of 3 weeks after Christmas. You go, oh, that was what that was for.
Yes. So don't do that if you're planning to do that. Anyway, this is what happened on match day 28. The Friday night game saw Barcelona in action, unusually. And they beat Mallorca by a 0-2. The goal was scored by the best child in La Liga. Sounds weird, but it's true. Lamine Yamal, still only 16. He is still only 16 and he's being brilliant. He scored his fourth league goal of the campaign. It was a really, really terrific strike and it gave Barcelona all 3 points. And then on Saturday, speaking of terrific strikes, Hugo Duro scored for Valencia. The only goal of the game for the striker against Getafe. He's on 12 league goals for the season, Hugo Duro, which is pretty special for him. Hold on. Let me just check that, Sid. Is he on 12 league goals for the season? I'm pretty sure he's on 12 league goals for the season.
I think you're right, but you have just caught me out, I must confess.
He is on 12 league goals for the season, yes. Yeah. I just had a moment of doubt because I tweeted about him potentially getting 15 league goals this season and how unlikely it would have appeared at the start of the campaign for Hugo Duro to score 15 league goals. But he's on track. And he got his 12th in that victory for Valencia against Cadiz. The most unlikely result of the weekend was at the Nuevo Mirandilla. Or maybe it wasn't, because Atletico Madrid have been absolutely shocking away from home this season. They lost for the 7th time away for the Metropolitano. They went down 2-0 to Cadiz. Cadiz scoring 10% of their entire season total of goals on Saturday afternoon, beating Atleti by 2-0. They hadn't won for 6.5 months, or just over six
months.
Yeah,
I was just about to say, it's absolutely insane. So you sort of say, well, it's not surprising because Atletico are terrible away, But I mean, there's terrible away and there's losing to Cádiz.
Yes. And as we said, Cádiz hadn't won since the 1st of September, in La Liga.
Against Villarreal.
And it's a result that really puts the cat amongst the pigeons, Sydney. Puts the relegation cat amongst the survival pigeons, if you like.
I like it, yeah.
Because Cádiz were somewhat cut adrift at the bottom, but they won and other teams around the bottom didn't. And then they're now only 2 points from safety and loads of other teams now are looking over at their shoulders after that result. Real Sociedad came from 2-1 down late on to win 3-2 at Granada. Granada looking very much doomed, along with Almeria. And then the Saturday night game saw Girona beat Osasuna 2-0. Girona getting back to winning ways and cementing their spot in second place in the table. On Sunday, Alaves beat Rayo by a 2-0. Rayo continue to be pretty abysmal. They're on a terrible run of form. And I think I told you, Sid, about a month ago, Rayo were 34-1 to get relegated. They were huge odds. I told you. I don't gamble. You sometimes do. I'm pretty sure I told you. And friend of the pod, Dermot Corrigan, I think, highlighted that to us. And now it's looking like a good bet because Rayo are on downward trajectory. Unlike Athletic Club, who are very much on an upward trajectory, taking advantage of Atletico Madrid's losing at Cádiz to cut the gap on fourth spot to just 2 points. Athletic winning 2-0 at Las Palmas, and they are just 2 points off a Champions League spot. Real Madrid beating Celta Vigo by 4-0. There was a first goal in a Real Madrid shirt for Arda Güler, a teenager who came off the bench. And a cracking game at the Benito Villamarín on Sunday night as Villarreal won at Betis by 3-2. Monday night football is Almeria against Sevilla. We don't often start, we don't often talk about the Friday game at all, really, on the podcast, which... yeah, we probably should. But we can start off talking about the Friday night game because that Barca-Mallorca clash was, I guess the headlines were grabbed by Lamine Yamal, but there were two teenagers who are brilliant in this game, him and Pau Cubarsí, who looks the absolute business at centre-back. And I know he's only played sort of 9 or 10 games in La Liga. He's only 18 and we shouldn't necessarily get too carried away. Ditto with Lamine, really. But they both look absolutely excellent.
Yeah, no, completely. And Pau Cubarsí, I think, is really interesting and because he's a player that comes into a team that's struggling. Now, I think this is often the way. Obviously, we know that the nature of youth team opportunity is that you get opportunity when the team needs you. You don't necessarily get opportunity because there's a wonderful plan that everything's been followed perfectly and you get a few games here and there and bit by bit you get put into the team. Now, in an ideal world, yes, that happens, but it's not about that. It's about competition. And actually, sometimes giving players opportunities because you need them gives you the chance to see things that you either didn't necessarily think would happen in the first team or that you perhaps weren't sure about or perhaps you just thought, well, I'm covered with the other guys. And of course, Barcelona actually have quite a lot of central defenders. So they've been perfectly entitled to say, well, with Inigo Martinez, with Christensen, with Ronald Araujo, with Jules Koundé, we've got enough central defenders. But Cubarsí has been exceptional. I was there in Seville when they played against Betis. And I can't remember now if that was the game that was 2 days before his 17th birthday or 2 days after. I think it was 2 days before his 17th birthday. So he was still 16 that day. And speaking to Xavi after the game, I was really struck by how positive he was about Pau Cubarsí. And there was a bit of me that thought, oof, you're kind of setting yourself up for a fall here by being so expressive about him. And yet the evidence is that he's right. You know, still only 17. A kid who, correct me if I'm wrong, I think this is right. I need to double check this, actually. He's now started the last 7 league games for Barcelona. You know, so this is a guy that's getting continuity now. And it's really, really striking that he has this lovely combination of the technical quality that I suppose you would probably say defines a Barcelona central defender. So think Piqué, I suppose, for want of a better alternative. You know, someone who can bring the ball out really well from the back, who's comfortable in possession, who doesn't panic and who seems to be in control. But then I think one of the things that you got the weekend was the physical capacity to go with it.
Yeah.
And you know, that's defined, I know this is a bit simplistic, but, you know, allow us to do it, and I certainly have been thinking about this today, defined by the fact that he was up against Karl Larin and Vedat Muriqi. Now,
two monsters.
In truth, look, well, I was going to say exactly this, yeah. So you wouldn't, in truth, necessarily look at those two and say they're the best forwards in Spain. They're not. But they're two very big, and in particular, Vedat Muriqi is very, very big, and in Karl Larin's case, very quick. Two really quite physical forwards. And Kubasi, who is a 17-year-old and still looks a little bit like a 17-year-old, he filled out a bit, but I don't think he's at his, you know, he's kind of the extent of his physical development.
I was convinced
development
he
yet.
Was 18, but he's not. You're absolutely right.
He's 17. And then, as I say, when I saw him in Seville, he was 16. I think he was either 16 or he had just turned 17. I got a feeling that his birthday was following day or 2 days later. And he didn't shirk from it. He was one of the things that Xavi said about him after the game, which I thought was very interesting. He said he was clever. He knows when to go into the physical contact and when not to. When to avoid it and choose instead to either anticipate or wait for the ball to drop and then kind of clear up behind. He's really, really good. I really liked Lewandowski's comments post-game to Polish TV, I think, in the Flash Zone. And Lewandowski said, it's been a long time since I've seen a defender like this. Since I've seen a defender who brings the ball out cleanly, who's as calm as this, and at that age as well. And I think he is genuinely special. Now, look, the normal caveats apply, and we've talked about this endlessly, and in particular, we've talked about this endlessly with Barcelona, and there are obvious reasons for that, because you look at the recent ones in Barcelona's history. Bojan, who had the anxiety attacks when he was coming into the team very young. Pedri, who admittedly isn't a youth team product, but joined them very young and has had terrible injuries since, and a whole load of them since European Championships. Gavi, who's played over 100 games for them already, plus 27 for Spain, and has got injured. Ansu Fati, of course, is now in Brighton, trying to resurrect a career that's been damaged by injury and pressure and everything that goes with it. And so you look at this, and naturally you think, okay. And obviously, I say this probably applies more to Lamine Yamal than it does to Kubasi, but it applies to both of them. And you sort of worry about getting too excited for them, but these are two genuinely special footballers. There's no doubt about that.
They are. And did you hear what Javier Aguirre said about Lamine Yamal after the game?
I loved Aguirre, and there'll be some people who don't take this. I saw this actually on an automatically translated webpage. Oh. I think it was from Mundo Deportivo. Sam Marsden had tweeted it. And they translated it automatically. Like, I assume it was automatic, either that or it's a really terrible translator. Because it just completely expresses the wrong idea. Javier Aguirre referred to him as a rat, which sounds terrible, but it's a complete opposite. And Aguirre, what he said was, 21 years ago, when he was at Sevilla, when he was at Osasuna, he said it was a game against Sevilla. And I don't really understand why. I think someone had shown him on a tape or a recording or something, a clip of Messi. And he said, I could see straight away. And he was like a rat. And the point being, of course, scurrying and quick and impossible to catch.
Yes.
And he says, and I look at Lamine Yamal, and he looks like a rat too, the Simbergüenza. And I love Simbergüenza there, which is basically, it's effectively saying the cheeky bastard, isn't it? It's saying, you know, this little shitbag, this little kid, you little git, how can you be so good this young? And there are definitely things of Messi in Lamine Yamal. And again, Xavi said it quite well post-game. He said, there are flashes of Messi. And he said, but let's please not compare him to Messi, because anyone you compare to Messi, you know, they lose.
Yes. And we shouldn't be comparing him to Messi, although people are.
Well, I think stylistically it's okay, you know, yes. In that some of the things that he does, because, and this is what Xavi said, you know, there are flashes of Messi because he comes in off the right, he's very, very left-footed, he likes to come inside and open up that body position that enables you to curl to the far post, which is, of course, what he did in this goal. He does it with an ease that makes him look a bit like Messi. Although one thing I don't think he does that Messi, well, there's lots of things he doesn't do that Messi did. But if you look at this, although he does it with ease, he does swing at the ball. One of the things that I always thought was really interesting about Messi is Messi had no backlift at all on passes or shots a lot of the time. Mm. It felt like there was no backlift. With Lamine Yamal, there is. But yeah, he is a properly good footballer.
Who's got a properly good goal, the only one of the game against Mallorca to give Barcelona a victory. Listen, we have been critical of Xavi and his consistent insistence on the side's upturn in fortunes in terms of results coming as a direct consequence of him saying that he was leaving. But if you look at the amount of points that they've picked up in the games since he said that, they're unbeaten. They've drawn twice and won five times. So, I mean, the performances haven't all been brilliant, far from it. But at the same time, they're managing to get results.
Yeah, I mean, I'm slightly dubious about that. And there's a couple of reasons for it. So I'm going to tell you the games. 1-0 against Osasuna. 3-1 at Alaves. All right, I'll give you that one. 3-3 with Granada, which was awful. 2-1 at Celta, which they were fortunate. 4-0 against Getafe. All right, that's a good one. 0-0 with Athletic, where, frankly, had Athletic played the first team, I don't think they win that. And 1-0 against Mallorca, rescued by Lamine Yamal. Now, a big part of the, I think, the reaction to what Lamine and Kubasi did at the weekend was actually partly about this context of his two kids rescuing a team like Barcelona. These are their hope now. And that loads them with a lot of pressure. But it also says something about Barcelona. And then the other part of that is, so that's, as you say, that's, what is it, 5 wins, did you say, out of 7 and 2 draws. Well, if you take the games before he pulled out, all right, so he lost to Villarreal, but before that, it's 3 wins in a row, then a draw, then a defeat, then another 3 wins in 4. And those wins in a row at Betis, Las Palmas and Almeria. Now, to be honest, I think that's as good as the 3 wins they've got this time round, isn't it? Post-announcement.
Well, if you get to speak to him in the mix zone, Sid, will you tell him that?
I have. Well, I sort of have done.
Yeah.
Not in those terms, but I do find this right. And one of the things about this weekend, and we've talked about this before, and I've defended Xavi, and actually I've defended Xavi quite a lot because I think there's a lot of good things he's done which have been overlooked, to be honest. And I think him winning the league last year was a genuine achievement. I really do. And one of the things that I defended him on is that this constant replaying of this argument that says, we've got better since I announced it. I kind of defended him because I said, look, he does a hell of a lot of press conferences and he gets asked this a hell of a lot of times. So what's he going to say? Mm. But this weekend he threw it in the post-match press conference, yes. Flash interview when he wasn't even asked it. And I just thought, I don't see what the need is. Why do you keep telling us this? It doesn't matter. It feels like he's trying. I don't know. Am I playing amateur psychologist here?
Himself.
Maybe I am. Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Trying to convince himself and everyone else that this was the right thing to do. And I'm not sure that he needs to be honest with you.
Mm. All right. Well, listen, we'll leave that there. If there's something that you'd like us to talk about Barcelona or Mallorca, send us a question and we'll answer it on tomorrow's Q&A podcast, one of the many bonus bits of content that our patrons at patreon.com/TSFP get every week for just €4 a month. It's very good value and you get loads of extra content. So why not come and join us? patreon.com/TSFP.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block, it's only a serve, it's only a tackle, a run, it's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
On to Atletico Madrid and their really quite abysmal performance in the 2-0 defeat at Cadiz. And I say abysmal performance, it truly was. There was absolutely nothing that you can take away from this from an Atletico Madrid perspective. And I know that they've got Inter Milan coming up on Wednesday night in the Champions League, and that's a massive game. And maybe their minds were wandering on this, but they really shouldn't have been. And this was a very strong team that was put out by Diego Simeone. They didn't rest anyone, really. Griezmann was unavailable. Pablo Barrios was ill. But apart from that, this is probably the side that's going to start against Inter Milan. There was absolutely nothing from them. And Simeone was asked after the game about this. And he said, you know, there are no words. I have no words for this. And he's been consistent in sticking with this idea that it's the manager's fault that they're so bad away from home. And last month when they drew 2-2 at Almeria, he was asked about this and he said, well, it's the manager's fault because he must be preparing the away games badly. That's the only explanation. And he's stuck with that editorial line after this game, again, assuming responsibility. And it is very, very difficult, particularly when you look at the numbers, Sid. At home, they are the best team in the division at home. They've got 40 from a possible 42 points in their own stadium. Away from home, they've got 15 points from a possible 42. They've lost 7 games away from the Metropolitano. Only 4 teams have lost more games away from home. The bottom 3 and Mallorca. It is it is almost inexplicable. We've been trying to explain it on the podcast this season. We can't explain it. Simeone can basically not explain it. And they were just so bad yet again against the most out-of-form team in the division.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? It's going to Cadiz, who don't score goals. I mean, I didn't realise it was quite as dramatic as you said earlier, that 10% of Cadiz's goals were scored in this game. I mean, that's an absurd, man. It's absurd. And all right, 10%, maybe that sounds much more dramatic than it is, because, you know, you're 10% is a reasonable chunk of a season, I suppose. But anyway, it is difficult to understand. I think if this game had happened in isolation, I think we would be talking about Inter.
Yes.
And we would be talking about a team that's mind is elsewhere. And we would be talking about a team that goes away to a place where they think, there's nothing in this for us. This isn't really our game. But I don't think that is a rational explanation of them away from home this season. And if, by the way, it was, then they've got a real problem. If for whatever reason there is a kind of a mindset that says it doesn't matter, or it's not their thing, or that away from home is not for them, then they have a really big problem. And I wonder, when you were talking about Simeone's discourse, do you think he's indirectly saying the opposite of what he's saying in terms of, like, is this message actually the opposite of the words?
Mm.
And I was like, I'm not doing anything differently.
Yeah.
And that's why I can't explain this. So, you know, what are these guys up to? I do think that there are one or two games that don't necessarily fit the pattern. There are one or two games when they actually played away from home and played reasonably well and were a little bit unfortunate. I think, as we've suggested a couple of times this season, I think there's something in the nature of the way that other teams press them that is problematic away from home and doesn't happen as much at home, partly because the other team doesn't dare. I think that's been part of it. And actually, I think maybe we saw that a little bit when Getafe went to the Metropolitano and drew. And I think we saw that maybe when Atletico are put under pressure, they're not quite so good with it. I think we've seen constant changes at the back. But then, of course, that would only explain an overall underachievement. It wouldn't explain, really, an underachievement only away from home. Because, as you say, at home, their figures are absolutely brilliant. And I don't know. I suppose the question really becomes, what does this mean for Inter?
Well,
and there's a bit of me that thinks it means they're in trouble. But there is also a bit of me that thinks, yeah, but at home they are so good. And they're actually reasonably good away from home in Milan as well. So I've just gone around the houses and said I haven't got an answer. So I'm basically doing Simeone here.
That's all right, but we don't have an answer. I was looking at the stats and seeing if there was some kind of statistical explanation. And there's no real pattern, because away from home they make the numbers are very similar. So they make more sprints away from home than at home. They move the ball quicker, so they play slightly more passes per minute. The defensive line is very, very similar. They've conceded the same number of goals from set pieces, both home and away. They average the same number of aerial duels won. The main discrepancy is in the attacking third, because Atletico have scored in 100% of their home matches, but only in 57% of their away games. And the shot success percentage is very telling. 15% of their shots at home are ending in goals, which is one of the highest in the division. I think only Girona have a higher percentage at home. But away from home, only 7.9% of their shots find in the back of the net. So, I mean, they're more clinical at home, but we still haven't got a reason why this is happening. And I don't think we're going to.
And I'm always quite, you know, the statistics about clinicality, I was about to call it, that's so Spanish, clinicalness, or the clinical nature of their finishing, yes, at home. I'm always slightly dubious about that, because, of course, it might be that at home they're not taking speculative shots. So the number of shots remains the same, but they only take them on when it's really clear that they are creating more, that there is a clarity about their attacks at home, that it's not necessarily that they're going away from home and missing really obvious chances. Maybe they're actually getting a bit more desperate and taking earlier shots that they shouldn't. And so the total shot number looks higher than it should be in terms of genuine chance. I suppose that's where you have statistical models of expected goals and so on, because it factors in the type of shot it is as well and the type of chance that you've created, although different expected models are slightly different and there's nuances and so on. But yeah, I find it really baffling. And there have been a few games away from home where you just sort of watch them fold a little bit. I also think that game management changes the nature of statistics, obviously, because you can have a game up to the first goal.
Yes.
And then a different game statistically after the first goal. And perhaps when they don't get the first goal, they then just, I don't know, they don't have maybe they need the other team to step out a little bit. I don't know.
It's baffling. They've got two absolutely massive home games coming up this week. They've got Inter Milan in the Champions League on Wednesday, and then they've got Barcelona on Sunday night as well. So two really, really big games. As we said, Athletic Club just 2 points behind them. They cannot afford to drop any more points in the race for top four. A quick word about Real Madrid 4, Celta 0. No Jude Bellingham for Real Madrid, beginning the first of his two-game suspension, but no real problems for the leaders. No. What did you make of this game?
No, it was largely pretty comfortable. It was one of those where you felt, while it was 1-0, you felt, well, you never know, there's half a chance to get caught. But it just didn't feel like a game that Madrid were not going to win. My overriding feeling of this, as happens quite often at Bernabeu, is how much I like watching Camavinga play.
Yeah.
And he played in the middle of midfield this time, and he was. I don't think I've seen a midfielder, I mean, there must be one, but off the top of my head, I can't think of one, who likes to kind of put his foot on the ball and drag it back as often as Camavinga, and is so good at kind of escaping those little bits of pressure. Occasionally messes it up, yes, it's true, and occasionally is positionally not all that strong. But there's an exuberance about him that I just really love watching. And he was fun. And Modric played very well as well.
Modric,
who started and played, what was it, 70 minutes? Something like that, 70, 75 minutes?
And Arda Güler getting that goal.
Yes.
Yeah. Someone who's not had...
Yeah, I mean, and you could actually see at that point as well that the other players were really pleased for him. And I think that suggests a player who's actually, despite being very young and turning up at a club like Real Madrid, felt under quite a lot of pressure, I think, with the injuries, and felt like he wasn't getting the opportunity to demonstrate what he can do. Now, I don't think he's suddenly going to play loads. He's not. But I think this, obviously, emotionally, I think, will help him.
Real Madrid 7 points clear at the top of the table and looking pretty good, looking very much in control of this title race.
It feels like a sort of a slow drift towards the title now, doesn't it? It kind of doesn't feel like there's any doubt in anyone's minds at the moment.
There isn't. I mean, next week they're...
I mean, it only takes a couple of results and it looks funny. Yeah.
Next week they're away to Osasuna, which is always a tough game.
Yeah.
And...
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. But yeah, genuinely, it's looking pretty good for Real Madrid with 10 games to go. Game of the weekend at the Benito Villamarín on Sunday night, Sydney. Betis 2, Villarreal 3.
This was brilliant. This game was really, really enjoyable. It was a lot of fun. There was... I mean, should we start with a controversy as if we were a Spanish radio station? There was the
always
bizarre double sending off, which was badly handled by everyone. Chimi Avila, Alberto Moreno, and in particular, Hernández Hernández, who seemed to have decided that because he's got two surnames, he had to give out two lots of yellow cards to two lots of players for not very much reason, to be honest. But the game itself was so much fun. Do you know what my favourite moment in this game was? And I must confess, I don't think I properly appreciated this when it happened until I saw the replay. And it's that the third Villarreal goal comes immediately after a great chance for Betis. I think it's William Jose who's literally 5 yards out, and there's a kind of a double save. And the ball goes to Alberto Moreno, who plays what looks to me at first glance to be a more or less aimless punt up the pitch. Uh-huh. Sort of a long, long diagonal to halfway. And I don't think first time I appreciated how good what Gerard Moreno does is. He jumps up and he takes it on his chest with his back to goal. He sort of falls with the ball. First time turns away from the challenge. Like first time sort of takes the ball on the bounce and turns at the same time. Dashes away. Slots it through to Sorloth, who hits a really lovely, clean, hard, low finish into the corner for them to win 3-2. And it's just a brilliant... brilliant assist. And by the way, the other thing that's worth pointing out here is Villarreal now, you look at their results, so I think I'm right in saying it's 8 games without defeat.
8 games unbeaten in the league.
They had that midweek. Yeah, 8 unbeaten in the league. Now, admittedly, in midweek, they went and got absolutely battered by Olympique Marseille, which feels like a bit of outlier now. But it's 8 in a row without defeat in the league. It's 3 wins in a row against pretty good teams as well. It's Betis, Real Sociedad, and I can't remember who the other one is. Maybe it's someone at the bottom. Granada, isn't it, I think? So one of their wins, yes, isn't particularly big. But Betis and Real Sociedad, both of them away, are big wins. Of course, they beat Barcelona 5-3 away, whenever that was, 6 or 7 weeks ago. You know, it's a really, really good run. And you're starting to think, actually, something's happening. And it was interesting listening to... Do you know what? I can't actually remember which Villarreal player it was who was talking post-game yesterday.
Comesaña?
No, I don't think
he spoke on the radio.
Who was it? No, I wasn't here. I can't think who it was now. Anyway, a Villarreal player.
Right.
whoever it was, spoke post-game and was asked about what they've changed. And he said, you can see that there's a clarity of an idea now and it's starting to fall into place and we're starting to do the work. And the thing that I thought was really interesting was he said, and we're starting to all go in the same direction. And I think that was a maybe not entirely deliberate reflection of the fact that internally things were not good at Villarreal, and that Marcelino, apart from the work and the physical work that they had to do, because physically that was a really poor team, I think has had to do quite a lot of emotional work with the team and kind of division breaking work, you know, to break down some of those fault lines or to fill in those fault lines. What would the metaphor be? Do you fill in a fault line? Anyway, whatever you do with a fault line, he's fixed it.
Whatever you do with a fault line, he's fixed it. Good. Name of the podcast today, I think. Whatever you do with a fault line. But yeah, so well done to Villarreal. Before we go, quickly, Sid, well done. You had a wonderful, wonderful Saturday afternoon, didn't you? You went to Albacete, which in itself isn't that wonderful, but you saw Oviedo win 2-1.
No. It's an absolute miracle. And obviously, look, I'm not so either stupid or naive or indeed arrogant to believe that I am genuinely the reason. But I was starting to think, oh my, I'm going to have to stop going, because I had been to see Oviedo. I think this was my seventh game this season, maybe my eighth, and I'd not seen them win. Ooh. And this despite the fact that they're a team that wins quite often, just not away from home. And so when they won 2-1, it was a massive relief. Have you seen the second division table? It's absolutely nuts. This is the second division table. 50-50, this is the points totals. From the top down, 50-50, 49, 49, 48, 48, 47, 46, 46, 44, 42. In other words, the top 10 are all within 6 points of each other.
Yes.
The top 8 are all within 4 points of each other. Like next weekend, there are literally, 7 teams who could finish the next match day top of the table.
Oviedo being one of them. So, yeah.
Which they won't be, obviously. But, I mean, Oviedo are very much in the Oviedo position at the moment, which is 1 point and one place behind the playoff positions. They were in fourth on Saturday, and I thought, I don't believe it. For the first time that I can remember, pretty much, they're going to finish in the playoff position, and they didn't finish in the playoff position. To be fair, I should probably point out the caveat. That list of points includes Leganés, who are top, and they do play tonight, so they could be an outlier. They could find themselves 3 points clear of everything.
That is true. That is true. And they're playing the bottom team on Morabieta, so there's every chance that they will.
Are they? Yes. Right. I must admit, I couldn't remember who they were playing. Right. Okay, there you go.
But there we go. It's very, very tight in the Segunda and worth keeping an eye on there. That's it for today's edition of the podcast. This week, we've got Barca against Napoli in the Champions League on Tuesday. It's 1-1 from the first leg. And Atleti against Inter on Wednesday. It's 1-0 to Inter from the first leg. And then on Thursday, Villarreal 4-0 down against Marseille in their Europa League clash, which is possibly unlikely to yield a comeback, but you never know. So that's the football coming up this week in terms of the European action with Spanish teams. We'll be back later on in the week over at patreon.com/TSFEU, the bonus podcast to discuss that and to look ahead to the weekend's action. So make sure you come and join us. It's only €4 a month. It's good value. You get loads of extra content. So come and try it out. And if you don't want to do that, we'll do another free podcast for you next week. How about that? Thanks for listening, amigos. Adios.
Cheerio.